Welcome to the Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. Today, we bring forth two brilliant stories from our first birthday show in April 2011, Coming of Age, stories of growing pains and rites of passage. To start, featured storyteller Anna Dimitriadis sees her view evolve when her grandfather passes on a painful truth.
Hello. So this is actually a story about the rite of passage and coming of age of both myself and my grandfather. My grandfather is a hugely influential person in my life and has been since I was 3 months old, which is the first time that I visited the ranch, which is Roaring Creek Ranch, in just this little valley between Montana and Idaho, 400 acres, completely surrounded by BLM land, so very untouched, still a very bumpy, thrilling ride along a dirt road to get there, and really our family treasure in the Dimitriadis family. So Anthony Dimitriadis, my grandfather, obviously very Greek in the name, kind of decided to purchase this land when he was tired of doing his big engineering thing, which is what he does. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And he purchased this land with the intention of having a huge family and passing it on to that family and passing along the name. But in a weird twist of fate, I am his only grandchild. And he had three sons. My mom actually comes from three daughters. So of that entire family, six very healthy men and women, I am the only grandchild, which is very strange. So a little bit about the ranch. My memories of the ranch include learning how to get eggs from the chickens without being pecked, or as my grandfather called them, chicky poo-poos, and learning how to pick up the chickens, which he loved to do. He'd pet the chickens every morning, and his morning ritual was to take an egg fresh from the chicken and crack it open in his mouth, which I did not actually partake in. He didn't pass that along to me. But we would also chase the cows, or cowsy-powsies, with the mini bikes and ride through the valley. He taught me how to make irrigation ditches, which we made from Hell Roaring Creek, which runs through the property. And when he was 80, he actually hiked up Hell Roaring Creek and proved that it is the headwaters of the Missouri River. So, you know, imagine this 5'6", very round, very pointy-eyebrowed Greek man hiking back by himself along Hell Roaring Creek. I mean, just really a brilliant man. So I guess I should give a little bit of background about my grandfather. He grew up in just outside of Athens until he was 18. So what that means is that he was there in the 1940s, which means he was there during World War II. And he doesn't ever talk about his memories of the war, but he did write them down. And he went through a lot, which I don't think is really displayed in the history books as much as it should be, but Greece was occupied by the Germans, and he spent most of his childhood in attics, being hidden away because the men and boys of the families were particularly sought after for, you know, killing. So he, the memory that he wrote down that really stuck with me the most was about a good friend of his and his good friend's father, who was, they were being hidden away in an attic two doors down from him. And they were actually tied to a tree and stoned to death. And he, you know, I mean, he experienced this and lived that for several years. And, it, you know, that was his life. And he decided that he would do whatever it took to come to America and be American. Hence, you know, him owning a ranch. I mean, he wanted to be a cowboy. You know, that was his, I'm going to get out and I'm going to make something of myself and be a cowboy. And so when the war ended in 1945, he actually came to America through the European Recovery Program, otherwise known as the Marshall Plan. So Truman brought over 2 kids under 18 from war-torn European countries, and my grandfather and one other child were chosen because of their essays that they wrote on what freedom means to them. So he was one of two in Greece that came over, and he has this picture on his wall in his study of him and 40 other European kids standing in the Oval Office with Truman. And it's this, you know, prized possession of his. So after that visit, it was 2 months, and he's sort of glib about it. He says that he was brought over here to see and be seen. And it was very much a publicity act. I mean, let's not say it was anything other than that. It was really America saying, we support these kids, you know. And he knew that, but he used that to his advantage. And really tried hard and learned English as much as he could and made himself available to any program that would take him. And as luck would have it, he got a full ride scholarship to Colgate and came over on the Queen Mary in 1949 and has that classic, you know, immigrant coming to America story where he turns to the person to his left and says, what's your nationality? And they say, American. You know, I mean, it's just your classic story. One of the first people that he ever met here is named Vern Blackman, which anybody in the engineering world knows that name, but they became fast friends, and Vern taught my granddad how to order food. And so my granddad would go to the same pub every day and order apple pie and coffee, which I really wish that I knew how to imitate a Greek accent, because it would be so much better if I did, but I don't. So he would order apple pie and coffee, and Vern tells this great story about how he ran into my granddad about a month later, and my granddad is sitting there dejected with his apple pie and coffee, and Vern says, well, what's the matter, Tony? What's going on? And he says, I'm so sick of apple pie and coffee. So at that point, they kind of, you know, worked together on how to order food. So my granddad came west and ended up getting his PhD and working in Caltech, which is where he met my grandmother, who was, by her own admission, studying the art of husband hunting, and she found my grandfather. So this is the point in the story where I mentioned that, in case you haven't noticed yet, I'm not Greek. There's a big difference between me and many Greeks, which is that I have a big last name but not a big nose. So I am not Greek by blood. My grandfather adopted my father when my father was three, and my grandmother has the classic secretary story where she came home 8 months pregnant to find her husband at the time in bed with his secretary. So that's when she decided to go major in husband hunting, and she found my grandfather. And they had two other sons, and I don't know how many of you out there are in step families or have step kids or step parents or any of that, but you know that the step relation is just never quite it. So my grandfather had son number one and son number two, and my dad was not either of those. He was the kid in the background of all of the home films, and, you know, Larry and Don, they were son number one and son number two. So lo and behold, my grandfather, trying to create this legacy, ends up having one grandchild, and that's from his stepkid, me. So I never really thought much about that. I just grew up going to the ranch every year. I'm 28, and I have only missed 3 summers at the ranch. I mean, this is a huge part of my life, and now it's becoming more and more obvious that the ranch will be mine. I'm going over there this year to learn how to run it and to learn how to take care of it, and I cherish it so much. It's a huge, huge part of my life. So that's all well and good. I love the place. They love that I love the place. My grandmother thinks I'm great. My grandfather thinks I'm great, right? And then, so there's this really strong family tie, and it all stems from the ranch. So I feel like I'm missing a part in my story here. I know that there's a part that's really important that I want to tell before I get to the end of the story. Anyway, we'll just skip ahead a little bit. So since I was 18. I'll just back up just because I think that this is fun. My grandfather is the person who really taught me about the art of making things up, make-believe. You know, every night when I was a kid, he would read stories to me. And it was always the same story. It was Sleeping Beauty. But it changed every night. You know, we'd be going along, yeah, Sleeping Beauty. And then, you know, the prince would turn into a dragon and run off with the dragon and leave Sleeping Beauty in the tower. Or, you know, the Sleeping Beauty would fall in love with the troll and go live underground. And, I mean, it was just always this different thing, you know. And it was just this magnificent surprise for me every night. And so, you know, you can tell I'm really connected to this man. He's always been a huge part of my life. So since I was old enough to really, you know what grades are and what ambition is and things like that, he would tell me, you know, in his very heavy Greek accent, you know, Anna, get good grades and go to college. Or when I was very little, it was, Anna, eat your dinner. I mean, it was always, you know, it was always something that he was demanding of me. And when I graduated from college and got my job and, you know, made sure that I did everything that I could to do right by him, he said, Anna, marry a rich man so that you don't have to worry about that degree that you just got. I mean, it just, which is very Greek. I mean, it's just, it is very Greek. I haven't really heeded that advice, but I did heed the advice to go to college and get my degree and all of that. So since I was 18, he made a point of sitting me down on the front porch of the ranch every night, and we would have a discussion, you know, every evening after wine time and coffee time, which they have very specific hours. You know, 4 o'clock is wine time, 5 o'clock is coffee time, 6 o'clock is dinner time, and it's always the same. So we would always sit on the front porch and discuss my future and discuss my, you know, my role in the ranch and my role in life. And, you know, have I found a good man? Have I found, you know, fulfillment? Have I done this or that? And so last year I drove over alone and just kind of made my yearly visit there. And we sat down to have that discussion. And there was something different about the way that he started it. He started it by saying, I'm sorry. And I wondered what he meant. And so I just kind of sat and waited for him to continue. And he looked down at his hands and he was very nervous. And he said, I'm sorry for not being a better grandfather to you. I was kind of speechless. I mean, as I'm sure it's obvious from what I've said tonight, he has always been that person in my life that I look to, that I really wanted to impress and make sure that he knew that I was trying. And what he said was, I never put much stock in you as a grandchild. I never really thought that you would be the one to take all of this on because you're not my blood. And I didn't really know what to say to that. So he continued for a while and kind of fumbled and said, you know, I had 2 sons, and I just was sure that they would have grandchildren and that I would be, you know, that this ranch would be filled with grandkids and that, you know, you would always be somebody that I loved, but not necessarily that person that stands to inherit my legacy. So I didn't really say anything. That conversation was very short. And so I went inside and I did the dishes and I did some thinking about all of that. And at first I thought, well, you know, what would he have given me had I been that grandchild that he, you know, that was sprung from his loins and all of that? You know, what if I were a real Demetriades? Would I have gone to Colgate? Would he have, you know, pulled some strings to get me in? Would he have, you know, been, what would have been? And then I realized that none of that actually mattered because I had been so busy trying to live up to his expectations that I became a person that he could be proud of. And I realized that that was kind of what he was trying to say, that he regretted not being more a part of my life from his perspective, but from my perspective, he was everything. So there was this real shift in my idea of who he was. I realized that My grandfather was not this great human being that, you know, always knew what to say and how to do things. And, you know, I mean, he writes short stories, and he's also an engineer, and he plays the piano beautifully, and he's a very charismatic man. But I realized that just with what little he had imparted to me, I had taken that and built upon it and become, you know, somebody that he could be proud of regardless of what he did. So it was this real coming-of-age moment where I got to be in the driver's seat and say, you know, this thing that you've given me and these lessons that you've taught me are all I need, you know. And I wouldn't have it any other way. If he had given me more, I wouldn't be the same person. I wouldn't have tried as hard because I wouldn't have had to, well, try as hard. So now when we speak with each other as colleagues. It's a very different conversation that we have. It's very business-driven. You know, what do you think about starting an LLC for the ranch? What do you think about, you know, putting it in a conservation easement? And, you know, we're very business-driven now. And there's more respect, maybe a little less of that affectionate love that you expect between a grandparent and their grandchild, but it's a more important relationship. And it has to do with the ranch, and it has to do with the future of his legacy. And I fully intend to keep that going. And so, you know, we've become almost business partners. And it's actually a really beautiful thing. And so I'm very much at peace with how that conversation happened and what he, you know, what he's been through. And I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to let him listen to this yet. I don't think I'm going to. But the more I think, it's taken me a year to digest all of this, and I'm really happy with how things turned out because I have more respect for him for telling me the way that he feels, and I think he has more respect for me for still loving him and still being his grandchild. So thank you very much.
Tonight, it's story time. Because tonight, our Story Studio continues with a free workshop designed to bring out your stories and your voice. This Monday, May 16th, stop by Coldmar Coffee House in Bodo from 7 to 9 p.m. for To the Stage, taught by Kate Riley, to learn the baby steps to bring you to the big stage. Now, story slammer Thea Bellis, the mother of the lovely Anna Demetriadis, finds a rite of passage in a heart-shaped suite.
My daughter did a lovely story about her grandfather, and I am going to do a story about my grandfather, whom I also adored. This must be genetic. I grew up in the Midwest. I've been a slave to Valley County for 30-some winters now, but we won't go there. I grew up in the Midwest. My mother and father were very confused parents. My father was gay and my mother was frustrated. So I spent a lot of time at the home of my grandparents. And I adored them. They were older grandparents. My grandfather built Studebakers in South Bend, Indiana throughout the war and supported my family nicely. And was very handsome, tall, had a big nose. Guess where I got it? And he wore a gray fedora. He was the handsomest, sweetest man. I just loved him. So one gray February day, actually it was Valentine's Day, probably in the early 1960s, I was at my grandparents' house as usual. And my cousin David was my true friend, my confidant. He was my age, and we got into all kinds of scrapes together. And somehow that Valentine's Day in the early 1960s, he managed to convince me that the postman brought all good little girls a big red candy heart on Valentine's Day. And I was so excited. I couldn't believe my good luck. So I ran to the front windows of my grandparents' house, and I hung on the windowsill all day long, watching through this raging blizzard in South Bend, Indiana, 1963, for the postman to come and bring me a Valentine. And the day just kind of kept going on and on, and my grandparents were in the background kind of watching me going, oh, my God, what do we do? Oh, gee. So it started getting on towards dinner time. The sun was setting. It was getting dark. I just sat on the couch and cried. I couldn't believe it. How could the postman forget me? So my grandfather, who had had his keys pulled by then, by my mother, put on his overcoat and put on his fedora and headed out into the blizzard. I did not know any of this. My grandmother was fluffing him out the back door and down the alley and up two blocks to Miami Street, where he could go to the local drugstore, which had everything in those days. And he bought me a big red candy heart. And he came back, and I'll never forget him walking in through the back door, his overcoat covered with snow, his fedora shaking it off, and he handed me this big red candy heart, and I just was so happy and also rather embarrassed because I had been so naive and hoodwinked by my cousin David. Once again, I couldn't believe it, but so happy that my grandfather cared enough about me to do this. And it was at that point in my young, young life that I thought, things are not always what they seem to be. Sometimes they're better. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Lennon Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme and podcast production are by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for more story time. Learn more at storystorynight.org.